Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Booth 61. Featuring movers and shakers on the Atlanta tech scene, organizations serving the tech market, and the inspired people who lead them. Now here's your host, Ricky Steele.
Welcome and thank you for visiting Booth 61. I am Ricky Steele, and I passionately serve as the Chief Development Officer for Hunter Technical Resources, Atlanta's premier IT staffing firm. We have a very exciting show for you today, and we're going to jump right in. But first, I want to take a minute to introduce our producer, Mr. Kevin Finn. Kevin is a master at the control board, in addition to hosting a number of shows here on Business Radio X. Kevin, how are you today?
I'm doing all right, Ricky. How are you doing?
I need a little more rain. Atlanta does not get enough rain.
I know.
The ARC is about half finished in the backyard. I've been working on it now for the last couple of weeks.
It's been absolutely crazy. I've had to cancel a bunch of softball matches and a couple of tennis matches. So
let's say Lake Hartwell is at full pool. It hasn't been there since 1964.
Well, at least we're not in a drought anymore.
That is a blessing, I guess. No question about it. We had a great event Monday night at the Atlanta CEO Forum at the Ritz-Carlton, and one of your colleagues,
Trevor
Wolford, did a great job of producing.
But, That's good.
At any point today, jump right in, ask questions. It's just a pleasure to work with you.
Always, Ricky.
I'm very excited about today's show on multiple levels. As most of you who listen on a regular basis know, our goal for Booth 61 is to build community and allow the rising tide to lift all boats. And I think my guests today have done this for many, many years. Certainly Steve Jeffrey, many of you know him. He's spent the last number of years in Atlanta. He's a serial entrepreneur, having taken two companies, SQL Financials and Claris Public, in the go-go days of the late 90s and early 2000s. Steve then jumped into the role of CEO at TAG when the organization needed a firm hand to guide it, and Steve did a remarkable job there. Steve is now the CEO of Brickstream, and we're going to focus mostly on Brickstream today. I also have Ms. Christina Elwood in the studio today, from Silicon Valley. She works with Steve in the marketing, sales, product development, and has been very, very helpful in putting this show together today, working through Laurie Gibson. And just give a shout out to Laurie out in California this afternoon. Without further ado, Steve and Christina, welcome to Booth 61.
Ricky, thanks. Great to be here.
Thanks very much.
It's great pleasure having you. Steve, I want to begin with you, but we can go back and forth, and Christina, jump in at any point that you feel comfortable. Steve, you've had a very successful high-tech career in Atlanta and across the country. Share with us what you think some of those highlights were over the years.
So, Ricky, I've been in the tech industry for 35 years, God help me. And I think from a highlight point of view, I have really, really enjoyed living and working in the UK, in Germany, in Europe, here in the US, in California, and obviously the last 17 years here in Georgia. So that's been a real highlight, being able to live and work around the world. I think secondly, the opportunity to travel. When I was growing up, my dad, he would say to me, son, travel the world. And boy, have I traveled the world. I've pretty much been to the four corners of the globe and had the opportunity along the way to gain experience in both traditional as well as emerging markets and economies. I think also 17 years in the 80s and the decades of the 80s and the 90s, I had the opportunity to work at IBM and HP, which in my opinion were two of the best decades for those companies. And I had the benefit of being trained by those two great global tech companies. And then the opportunity here in Georgia to be in three early-stage venture-backed companies. And then lastly, 17 years as a CEO, I've been very fortunate to work with some really, really great people.
My father gave me some similar advice, but it was a little shorter. He said, get lost. I was like, could have gone anywhere in the world, I guess. He just, a little different advice from our parents. Christina, what brings you to Georgia?
Well, I actually came to Georgia to work with Steve at Brickstream. So my father actually, I'm from a family of eight, and he just said, are you still here?
I hope you all still have yours around. Mine has been gone a number of years.
Sadly, mine too.
Yeah, mine as well.
Well, that is sad for all of us, but we got great memories. Steve, let's go just touch briefly on your time at TAG as CEO there. What was that experience like for you being a seasoned executive in running businesses, getting in the not-for-profit association environment? What was that like?
You know, Ricky, it was very different. It came along in 2003 when Trip Rackley, who I'm sure many of you know, suggested to me I take some time out and get involved in TAG. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. It was great exposure to this terrific Atlanta technology, Georgia technology community that we have. But as you say, it was a big departure for me, a totally different kind of a business model, a not-for-profit. And one of the things I kind of felt as in my 18 months there was that there was a terrific opportunity to develop it. But what it really needed was a seasoned, experienced, professional not-for-profit executive. And fortunately, following me, I think that's exactly what TAG got, and it's really gone from strength to strength in the last 8 or 9 years. It's a great organization.
Well, if I recall, that was your advice to the board, was to find a seasoned association-type executive. And Tino Mantella, who sat in your chair where you are today 3 or 4 weeks ago, was with the YMCA, I believe, in Chicago, perhaps. And
That was
a great job.
That was definitely my advice. It was, you know, there's a great opportunity with TAG, but it really needs, the business model is different, and to scale that business model, you need a professional that really understands it. And I think in Tino, who they subsequently brought in, they really found, you know, a fabulous executive to do that. And testimony is the 20,000 membership and the breadth that TAG spans today. So he's done a terrific job.
Now, you stayed involved with TAG over the years, have you not?
Loosely, yes. It gave me the opportunity, even though I've been in Atlanta for 8 years when I got involved in 03, to really network and get involved with a lot more people than I had previously done in my time here.
Well, and you advised us recently to help found the Retail Society for TAG.
That's true. And Christine has taken up that mantle and is indeed working with TAG to do that.
It's a very impressive group.
So that's a new special interest group under the auspices of TAG?
It is indeed. So they have retailers from the whole Georgia area. Coca-Cola is involved, Home Depot, a number of other organizations, and as well as vendors, as a typical society is, and they're putting on programs that are specific to retail and retail technology.
That's fabulous, and I would think that is as good a calling card as you can have in a business when you work with the people that you're working with and helping them create an association or a place for them to gather to share knowledge, and you're in the middle of that. That can be nothing but, you know, positive for Brickstream.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, me too.
Steve, you've taken two companies public. Back when I was at PricewaterhouseCoopers, I first met you. SQL was about to go through that process or in the middle of that process. Everybody wanted to go public back in those days, and now I'm not sure a lot of people that did go public are glad for it. But what was that process like?
You know, you're exactly right, Ricky. Back in the late 90s and certainly the early 2000s, that was the thing to do. Back then and even more, I think today, it's a very rigorous process. It's a process that as a company you've got to be highly prepared for. You do not want to go public unless the business model of the company is stabilized, the revenue stream of the company is pretty predictive, and you have, you know, basically all of your ducks lined up from a financial point of view and otherwise. So, you know, a rigorous process, a lot of regulatory issues and controls required, an expensive process. Probably more expensive today than it was, you know, 10, 12, 14 years ago when I went through it on those two occasions. But obviously, it is still today, perhaps less attractive than it was then, but a very viable process in the business of scaling a company. So, you know, from a personal point of view, that's certainly an option for a company like Brickstream going forward. You know, I will personally tell you I'm not in a hurry to do that again. still a very viable way to go.
That has, again, the regulations that are involved in that process and the cost, and then the scrutiny afterwards. I mean, Dell itself is now in the process of trying to get out of their public offering and go back private again because of the, I guess, the scrutiny and the and it's hard to have a vision for long-term success when you're worrying about making numbers for next quarter.
It is. It tends, you know, when you're in the public eye, when you're in the public markets, you are very quarterly focused. You're very short-term focused. You know, and a lot of Americans feel that that's, compared to other parts of the world, that's not a good thing. You know, other parts of the world, your periods of time that are being looked at are 6 months and in some places longer. And certainly I found being in the public eye and under public scrutiny in such short periods of time to be a major difference when you become a public company. It certainly affects your behavior and the way you address things, you know, and not always in a good way. Not always in a good way. And that's, I don't think that's any different today. If anything, it's probably even more intense than in the late 90s and 2000 when I went through it.
And the cost was exorbitant. I remember in those days, just to get to the market from the accounting side was north of $1 million. And I assume from the legal side was probably somewhere close to that, if not greater.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you know, the lead-in time, the filing of the S1 had to stay current. If market conditions cause you to, you know, delay or change the schedule you were on, the accounting, the legal, the compliance issues. I mean, just a lot of expense. And if you look at the effect of Sarbanes-Oxley since, which was subsequent to 98 and 2000 when I did my two public offerings, that's just intensified and added to that process and cost since. So it was initially I was a public company CEO when Sarbanes-Oxley first came in, and the notion of having to sign on the dotted line every 3 months was initially a somewhat uncomfortable feeling, just because it was different, not mm-hmm. because of anything else. But a expensive, time-consuming process to go through, no question about it.
Well, you mentioned Brickstream and that you're not interested in perhaps going through that process quite yet, but maybe at some point. But I really, that brings us into what our topic of conversation is today, and I'd love for you and Christina both to kind of give me the background of Brickstream. A lot of people, maybe hearing today have not heard of you and or think it's maybe a fairly new startup because you've done some new startups. But Brickstream is a 10-plus-year-old company, if I recall. And so maybe you and Christina could kind of give us a background of what is Brickstream and what is it all about.
Sure. I mean, Brickstream is today in a market whose time has come. It's a 10-year-old company, and when it first began in the business of retail analytics and retail analytics for the brick-and-mortar world specifically, it was a little bit of ahead of its time. Today, I think its time has come. What Brickstream is really all about is, in the same way as you people hear about Clickstream analytics for the online world, for online shopping, Brickstream is all about providing the same kind of analytics for the brick and mortar, for the stores that many retailers obviously have. 92% of retail transactions still go through store chains as opposed to online. So retailers really find themselves in a situation today where they have to begin to understand far more about the customer experience, customer behavior, and be able to measure that in much more of a scientific way in the brick-and-mortar environment, just like they do in the fast-growing online environment. Not just because there's a competitive element between online and the store chain side of it, but because there's a need to understand the multi-channel aspects of it. If we press buttons, marketing buttons on the online side, what effect is it having on the physical side, and vice versa? And how do we leverage those effects going forward? So, Brickstream technology developed over 10 years now, 10 years in the making, is really primely positioned to begin to take advantage of this growing, fast-growing need in the retail world.
Christina?
Well, I would just add to that there are multiple stakeholders within the retailer that can take advantage of this clickstream-type analytics in their stores. The store operations folks who are responsible for the store itself benefit from things like measuring the traffic coming into the store and how many of those people buy, and managing things like the wait time in the queues of the store. But merchandising can also benefit by understanding what's happening at the end caps and how people are interacting with displays in the store. And marketing, and what Steve was mentioning on the multi-channel analytics side, and having a better understanding of what happens when the customer finally hits the store. Marketing spends a lot of money to drive the customer to the store. They'd like to know more about what happens when they get there. So we can help with all of those things. And then finally, in loss prevention and providing some behavior information to go along with their visual information about what's happening in the store as well.
Steve told me a story yesterday at breakfast about something that I just found fascinating, was the end cap game in some of the major big box stores, where I would think that the first end cap when you walk in would be the greatest one to be in because that's the first thing you see. But, Steve, why don't you share that story again? I'd really come from your lips.
Well, we found with a number of retailers, not necessarily just big box retailers, that end caps that they think are positioned in the most valuable part of the store, and therefore they're typically the most expensive end caps for products to be displayed and advertised on. What we found as we've applied our in-store analytics, that actually there's this notion of shopping speed, and in many retail environments, people go into that store with an objective in mind. And as they go into the store, they don't slow to what we call shopping speed until they are some way into the physical environment of the store. And so end caps that are what you and I and others might think placed right at the front of the store might be the most valuable, turn out to not be the most valuable because people have not slowed to shopping speed. They're heading for the pharmacy, they're heading for the paint department or whatever it might be, and by the time they slow to shopping speed, they're past those end caps. So when you look at the effectiveness of those end caps from a stopping power perspective relative to the number of people that go past them, they tend to be less effective than other end caps within the environment of the store.
Yeah, I would just add that there are a lot of interesting surprises that you find out when you start doing passive measurements of people's behavior in an environment. Many of the expectations that we have about how people actually behave in a space are not always what really happens. And having that fact-based, continuous data to evaluate makes your decision-making fact-based as well. So you have more confidence in it. You can spend your money more carefully and more effectively. And you can see a cause and effect result when you make a change in the store, whether that's moving an end cap or that's changing the service expectations with the staff, whatever it happens to be, you can measure it objectively. And that's a big value that we just don't have without having some type of technology to do the data capture.
Steve, you were not a founder of this company. You came in the last number of years. What really attracted you to Brickstream as opposed to, I'm sure, other opportunities you had available?
Well, when I first came to Atlanta in late 94, Ricky, it was from Hewlett-Packard. And at the time, the thing for me was, I had this notion of wanting to get into a small startup type company and really understanding whether I could hack it in the startup entrepreneurial world. So, SQL Financials and Claris taught me that, in fact, I loved it. And a lot of the great training I'd received in IBM and HP was, incredibly valuable in small early stage companies. So one of the things that attracted me about Brickstream was at that time was it was early stage. It was a new market. It had really cool technology the people I met, you know, like our technical founder, Ralph Crabtree, and others were really good people. The investors that were involved, you know, MDV and Columbia Capital and Royal Bank of Canada, were good investors, and I'd had the opportunity with SQL Financials and Claris to, you know, to work with different types of venture investors, so I knew a little bit about that. And, of course, it was Atlanta-based, and you know, my 8 years or so, 9 years or so by that time I've been in Atlanta, I'd come to realize that I really like this part of the world. I like the people, I like the community, I like the seasons. I think it's a great way of life. So, you know, all of those things combined to me said, here's a great opportunity in a young startup company in a market that's pretty much white space with some pretty cool technology.
You've somewhat answered my next question, but I want you to maybe elaborate a little bit further. You are located in Norcross, which is a suburb of Atlanta.
Yeah.
You could be in Silicon Valley, you could be in Austin, you could be in Boston or Research Triangle. Why Atlanta?
Well, obviously, as you pointed out, I was not the founder of Brickstream. So it was originally founded out of people that were involved a little bit with Georgia Tech and people that the company originally commenced down in Midtown.
Mm-hmm.
We only moved to Norcross a couple of years ago from the standpoint of as we expanded and office facilities and so on. But I think that having said that, one of the things I found over 17 years here, there are some really great technical people in Atlanta. There's some great entrepreneurial people in Atlanta. And whilst, you know, Atlanta in the Southeast isn't Silicon Valley, it is, in my time here, has grown leaps and bounds from an entrepreneurial, from a technical resource, from a creativity and innovation point of view. I think with Georgia Tech now, with you know, the tremendous school that is, with Athens, with Research Triangle, and on and on and on, with TAG. I think I read the other day that Atlanta or the Southeast is one of the top five entrepreneurial regions in the country as in terms of measuring entrepreneurism. So I think there's a hell of a lot to be said for it. Operationally, it's a lot less expensive to operate in what is more and more a virtual world. We don't have to be in Silicon Valley necessarily to build a you know, great software or great technology in the business that we're in.
That's great. Well, you've built a solid team, and I've read the bios, and of course, met Christina and others, and I know Ralph is a good friend of Doug Kling, who's our vice president of recruiting back at Hunter Technical Resources. What's your secret for finding the right people for startup and early stage growth companies versus the larger HPs and IBM from your previous life?
Well, you know, Ricky, I've sort of tried to adopt a number of the philosophies that I learned in HP. They used to call it the HP way back in the 70s and 80s and 90s. But that is to create very much an opportunity-based culture, a culture where the people in it, you know, have a pretty good understanding of what you're trying to do, what the vision and the mission of the company is. And you create an environment where people can have their say, where it's okay to have an opinion, where it's okay to voice that opinion, where it's okay to disagree, and sometimes to disagree pretty fiercely about things. And I think if you create that environment, then you'll create a word-of-mouth kind of situation, which is still very powerful today in terms of finding good people, that will spread in the community that you are part of, in our case here in Atlanta. And I think in both SQL Financials and Claris, and I think again in Brickstream, we've been able to do that, different companies, different solutions and technologies, but we've been able to do that, and as a result we have really good people at all levels across the company. And you know, I think it's fair to say most of them really like working there, and that I think is the secret. It's as complicated and as simple as that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the culture is a very healthy and vibrant culture, and it's a pleasure to work with this team of people. And I've worked with, I mean, I'm from the Silicon Valley, and I've worked with probably over 100 startups at this point in my career, many of them as an interim executive on the management team. So I come in at a time when a company is in an inflection point and stay with them through that period. So I've seen a lot of teams function under the fast growth or high pressure environments. And I have to say, this team, that's part of the reason that I joined the team, was because it's a joy to work with them.
That's great. You know, without the right people and the right combination, then it's not work, it's drudgery. And nobody has a good time. And the customers know that you're not having a good time. So I think you've created the right environment. Right. I know your Vice President of Business Development, Steve, is it Hornyak?
Hornyak.
Hornyak. I knew I'd get something close, that southern diction that I have. But he was with you at both SQL and at Claris. Working together for over 15 years in three companies is kind of unique in this day and time as we move around. How did you manage that, and how's it worked to your advantage having somebody like Steve around for that long?
Well, I think you're right, Ricky. I mean, 17 years working across three companies and two public offerings and half a dozen acquisitions and divestitures is
wonder you hadn't killed each other.
Is fairly unique. I mean, I think what happens over a long period of time like that is you develop a sort of a trust, you know, a respect in working together. You know, frankly, both ways, your strengths and weaknesses. You know, it also goes back to we often disagree. In my opinion, multiple opinions, sometimes fiercely argued, leads to better decisions. And certainly, Steve and I, over the years, have debated many, as you might imagine, many business issues and problems across three companies and 17 years. But you know, we have a great relationship. He's, you know, great at what he does, and you know, I think testimony evidence is that we're still working together. I mean, for those people that know Steve and I, you know, I am the better looking one and the thinner one.
Radio it shows that as good as anything you'll ever find.
But I am also the one with the gray hair and the of more advanced years. So, you know, but on a serious note, I mean, we've had 17 years and you know, it's majority of which has been good stuff and fun times.
A little aside, 2 weeks ago I had the founders of Hunter Technical Resources in. They were three young guys that started at Georgia Tech together. Mm-hmm. None of them knew each other, but they'd been together 15 years, or they were together 5.5, 6 years at Tech, and then 15 years working together. It's created an environment, and 5 or 6 employees have been there for 14 of the 15 years. I think that creates kind of a culture that, I don't want to say family, but in the South we say family.
Yeah.
And it's a family situation that breeds trust and all the other attributes that you mentioned.
Well, you know, and Brickstream has that because, you know, okay, you mentioned Steve and I and 17 years in three different companies, but then you take Ralph Crabtree and Ian Curry and Dan Darcy and one or two others at Brickstream. They've been involved with Brickstream, Ricky, since before Brickstream became Brickstream.
Okay.
They were involved working on the core technology that today is at the heart of Brickstream's solutions inside NCR in the mid-1990s. They've been together, whatever the heck it is now, 15, 16, 17 years. So we kind of have that at the heart of our culture in Brickstream, which I think is, you know, we've had investors that have been involved for 10 years, for goodness sake. I mean, we have that as very much at our core.
Well, I think if I could add to that, Steve, that that goes back to the issue of trust. I mean, trust is the fundamental currency of all business. And if you have a culture of trust with your board and you have a culture of trust with your team, you create an opportunity to create unparalleled success. And you've done that, and I think that's the testament to that longevity. And it sounds like your team similarly built a kind of trust, core trust internally, and that creates a halo that everyone else enjoys.
It really, really does. Brickstream's really at the forefront of an emerging field, as you said earlier. maybe you're slightly ahead of your time at the very, very beginning, but now Behavior Intelligence Solutions, I'm not sure anybody's selling any products anymore. We're selling knowledge and information and buying patterns and that sort of thing. Kind of give me a more layman's explanation of Behavior Intelligence Solutions and how stores are using that to their advantage today.
Okay. Well, if you think about the online world, when you shop online, you log on, and from the moment you log on to the whatever site it is, every keystroke that you take is captured and analyzed. So your entire shopper behavior and the experience that you go, what you buy, how you navigate, how long you spend there, when you come back, and on is all captured and provides insights to the online retailer about your shopping experience and how they should potentially approach you in the future to get you to come back and back again. In the physical world, what we're trying to do is the same thing. Of course, the problem's a little bit different, right? How do you collect the same level of accurate data when you and I walk into a physical store and we go about our business in whatever way that we do that? Much more difficult to do is my point. Behavior intelligence is about putting together the hardware and software technology to enable that. So the first part of it is data capture devices that are mounted, typically ceiling mounted, around the physical environment of the store to enable us. Think of them as small computers with eyes. You know, they're network devices. They're 3D to make them accurate, just like online. No good collecting inaccurate data because the insights will obviously be inaccurate. So you have these devices. You collect the data. And the first part of our solution does that and processes in the store, in those devices, what we call count metrics, cue metrics, and behavior metrics. And so there's a lot of processing at the edge. In fact, we talk about big data. We process terabytes of data per day using these small devices all networked together. Once we have those metrics about what people are doing as they move around that physical environment, we then push them to the cloud and we integrate them with labor data, with transaction data, with demographic data, with weather data, and we begin to produce even more analytics about the shopper behavior looked at across the entire chain or perhaps segments of the chain. So behavior intelligence, from a product point of view, is hardware and software. It's a in-store data collection platform, and it's a cloud-based analytics platform that in combination drives out the analytics that are delivered to retailers to help them understand what their customers are doing, both historically and with real-time dashboarding and predictive-type capabilities.
Well, if you think about the problem that Steve has outlined, you know, footsteps don't create clicks. So by capturing the images and processing them to figure out where people are and where they're moving and if they're in a group like a family and so forth, helps at three different levels in the organization. For the store manager and the staff, it helps them to figure out what services are needed and how the experience is playing out for the shopper. For the regional level of the retailer environment, it helps them to understand what's happening across all their stores that they're responsible for and how things might be, like the weather or other transient activities may be affecting what's going on in each of their stores. And at the corporate level, they can look across all of their stores and do a better job of planning what they're going to buy, how they're going to get it into the stores, and what kinds of promotions and so forth they may want to run. And if you're running, and this is not an unusual number, if you're running 1,000 stores or 2,000 stores or 5,000 stores, that's a lot of information, and you can't be everywhere at once. You can't know what's going on ahead of time. So it's vital information to them to know what's going on in the store. And the only thing that's a surprise is that they've been able to do so well up to now without having that data.
And I would assume this is real time. Somebody can be in the back of the store monitoring it 24/7.
Can be on a smartphone, can be on a tablet, can be on a static PC.
In fact, dashboards are very common in the stores with our solutions where we might be reporting a real-time wait time in a quick service restaurant so they can keep track of how long it took to process each of their customers through the store so they know somebody's waiting and they can get somebody up there to help move the line along more quickly. And, you know, the operative term in quick service restaurant is quick. So the more people you can serve in the shorter period of time, the more you're satisfying both them and your own bottom line.
No question. I would assume brick-and-mortar retailers are using this technology to become more effective as they're competing with the online retailers, not perhaps pricing-wise, but and maybe they're doing it pricing-wise as well, but more the analytical information to help them know where the end caps need to be and what needs to be this, that, and the other. But what are some of the other benefits as well?
Of what we do?
Well, certainly.
It's very much about understanding the effectiveness of marketing promotions, the effectiveness of digital signage, which is a big new trend, the effectiveness of store layout, and the design and the traffic, the associated traffic flows that occur from that, the effectiveness of their front-end service environments. Understanding the shop time in a store is one thing. Understanding the service time in terms of, you know, when people are ready to leave the store is another key component to it. We talked about end cap analysis and all of the potential benefits of that. You're going to begin to see the benefits move into, the loss prevention areas, where today that's largely about surveillance. What you're going to start to see happen is you're going to combine the surveillance with real-time analytics. So instead of it being all after the fact, when you look at sweethearting, when we are looking at queues and the service environment at the front end of perhaps a big box retailer, we're also real-time alerting when sweethearting starts occurring. Sweethearting was when there's collaboration between, the buyer and the cashier, and not everything is being, things like that. So, there are just a myriad of benefits, just like the online retailers have had because of the nature of what they do from pretty much from the get-go. Is what is increasingly being demanded and required in the physical store side of it. Some of it's competition, certainly if you're talking about competing with Amazon, that's a big part of it. But some of it is a lot more and more retailers have their own online e-commerce component to what they do or channel to what they do. And so, as I kind of said earlier, they want to understand the multi-channel effects and how to leverage the multiple channels to get the best end result for the customer and for them in the most efficient way. So, you got that going on, not just the competitive component to it today. And it's kind of interesting, as I mentioned, 92% of transactions on average are still going through the physical side, even with the, intense growth that you've seen in the online side. So, and there's a huge amount of investment in brick and mortar in the retail side or the mall side. You go to China, for goodness sake, and Asia. They're building 1,500 malls in the next 3 years in the east coast of China. And, the mall operators want to know all that kind of information. How many people are coming into those malls? Where are they shopping the most? How many people are part? And on and on and on. Just, huge amounts of data. Again, the big data world that are required as this all, develops.
Well, that's actually a really good example of where the data ties directly to revenue, too, because for a mall operator, the price of the real estate that they're selling to the retailer is a direct function of the traffic that they can drive to that store. So measuring the traffic in their mall is about setting the prices on their real estate. So it's a big deal for them. You mentioned competition in the offline world in grocery, where we are very strong in selling queue management solutions. There are grocery stores that are differentiating themselves from their competition on the strength of their short wait times in their lines, because everyone hates to wait at the grocery store. They hate to wait, period, but they hate to wait at the grocery store, and that is not a good form factor for online. Right? Mostly you go into the store, even though you can order things online, you can pick them up at the curb, or sometimes you can even have them delivered. Largely, people buy their groceries in person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that would seem to me not only the real estate side and the stores, but also in a big box, Home Depot, Walmart, their co-op dollars are a big part of their income, mm-hmm. and they sell that data back to mm-hmm. Black & Decker or whoever yep. As to where they're going to be placed in the store, et cetera, et cetera. So I just have a hard time wrapping my mind around this much data. This is not big data. This is huge data.
It is huge data.
Huge data.
If you imagine tracking people through, you know, we track people whether it's simply at the entrance. We track people in an aisle environment. We can track people in an entire store environment. You know, in one big box retailer, we're tracking people across the entire store. Probably 300-350 plus of our data capture devices across whatever the square footage of that store is. It's huge. We're collecting that data 24/7. It never stops. You know, each one of those devices potentially processes 2 terabytes of data per day, each one, and there's 350 of them. Now, we're turning that data into metrics, count, queue, behavior metrics, and then we're integrating it with transaction and labor and whatever else. But it's a lot of data. It's a lot of data.
Well, because, as you mentioned earlier, 92% of the traffic is still going through the retailers, anyone in technology is trying to create something new and design it specifically for retailers because that is where the money is and where it will be for many years to come. Why is Brickstream going to be the company that we should all be betting on and keeping our eyes on going forward?
Well, I think there's several points to that. One is we're pretty unique in terms of the accuracy. So again, in the online world, accuracy is never questioned. It's just really not an issue. In the physical world, collecting accurate data, which is the first step in the process of providing these analytics, is really hard to do. We are unique in doing that better than anybody else. We're unique in being able to do that in a multitude of different kinds of environments. We can do it inside. We can do it outside. We can do it at different heights. We can mount the devices obliquely at different angles. We can link devices together and create a contiguous path of the track of a person as they move down an aisle or indeed around the entire environment. But at the end of the day, we can do all that and we can do it more accurately than anybody else. And that's not a marginal uniqueness. It's a very significant benefit to the Brickstream solution. I think the second thing is when you're collecting this much data, when you want to scale this across, you know, a Gap or a Limited Brands or somebody like that who has thousands of stores, you need to be able to deploy all this, manage the software environment, manage the data collection, and manage the resulting analytics in a very easy, scalable way across such a large amount of real estate. Again, Brickstream is pretty unique in the way it has made the deployment of these solutions very flexible, very easy to do, and very easy to subsequently manage and maintain. Two key elements I would add to.
Yeah, I would also say that the cloud-based analytic engine that we have built is also very critical to our differentiation. We're the only company that offers both the back-end analytic engine as well as the data capture device. And, of course, being able to work together gives us an additional value proposition. We then can layer applications on top of that analytics platform, and that makes it very extensible and very flexible. It allows you to bring data in from other systems. It allows you to feed your data into other systems. And it allows you to add applications as your needs evolve over time. So having an investment that you make that will pay for itself many times over as a retailer is very, very important. Those same devices, the same device we put at the door, we can put at the queue, we can put in other places in the store, and we can take data in from other sources into that device, again, giving you future-proofing and extensibility on what you're measuring and what kinds of questions, business questions, you can answer using that data.
To me, the accuracy is just it's hard for me to wrap my mind around. My wife and I own 2 retail stores, and we've used secret shoppers, and I always wonder if that individual is having a good day. And if they're not having a good day, then no matter what we do, it's not going to be right. If they're clicking, are they really clicking, or are they on their smartphone? I mean, there's so much to do. You're giving pinpoint accuracy in real time, and that just blows my mind. I mean, it's just got to be the differentiator of all differentiators.
Well, and you remove all the bias, right? As you say, you don't have to worry about if the person's tired or in a bad mood or got distracted. You're measuring continuously, so the fact that they're only in the store 10 minutes measuring what's going on, this is continuous data, so you know all the time what's going on. It's just an apples to oranges solution. We have one large multinational grocer who was able to completely eliminate their mystery shopping at the front end of their store. They saved over $1 million a year just on that point alone.
That's real money, any way you look at it. Yep. We've talked about big box stores. We've talked about retailers, Gap and others. What are some of the other industries where Brickstream could add value or already does add value perhaps?
Well, you know, Ricky, as we kind of discussed, we're predominantly focused on the retail world, grocers, big box, QSRs in particular. But we do have partners that take our technology, our hardware and software technology, and take it into, you know, transportation, into railway stations, train stations, into airports. We have partners that take us into our technology into healthcare. And there are various things in healthcare that our partners are doing. In security, we kind of touched on security, are all sort of other verticals where partners are applying our technology. And if you kind of think about it, what we do is applicable not just in a retail environment. We've chosen to really focus it there because we think the need and the opportunity to grow is greatest there right now. And as a small company, you always need to focus. But certainly partners can take us into those other areas. I mean, there I put down here some of the kind of slightly oddball environments that our technology is being used in. It's being used at Wembley Stadium for crowd control in certain parts of the stadium. It's being used on Trident nuclear submarines in the UK to understand the number of people that are in the pen area as opposed to on the submarine itself, and what the movement of those people is. It's on buses as they move around in Southeast Asia in places like Thailand, measuring the flow of people on and off of buses. It's in, you know, memorials and museums. You know, we're at ground zero in New York, tracking a lot, the numbers of people that are moving through that whole environment there. So there's all kinds of, you know, weird and wonderful places the technology, you know, can be applied. But certainly healthcare, transportation, security are some of the bigger opportunities through partners that that we see over time. And as we grow, that there's an opportunity to expand into.
Yeah.
You've mentioned it. We talked about you being based in Norcross, and yet you would think of the big box stores and some of the other places we've mentioned are all domestic in the United States. But you just mentioned Wembley Stadium. You mentioned the Trident submarine, which can be anywhere in the world at any moment's notice. I think you mentioned a third thing, but so you're truly a global company, and office is here, but you have an office, I think, in Paris and some other places as well.
No, we have offices in Singapore. We have offices in Berlin and in the UK, in London. We're going through the process of opening an office in Shanghai in China. But, you know, Ricky, we truly are global. I wouldn't have believed it a few years ago, but we truly are in the four corners. I mean, one of our biggest partners is in Russia. I went to Russia earlier this year with a little bit of trepidation, but was I have to say pleasantly surprised. But you know, the mall growth in Russia is phenomenal, and it's kind of wall to wall, you know, Brickstream solutions. Eastern Europe, the Middle East, China. You know, 1,500 malls in the next few years. Southeast Asia, you know, Australia. We're doing some really interesting things down in Australia. South America, you know, Brazil, Chile, Colombia. you know, just literally all over the world. I've been in the last 12 months most of those places, so it's doing wonders for my mileage program. And I think I've hit diamond already this year.
And then when you achieve that, your gift is get on another airplane. That seems like a bad gift.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I think they've completely, dominated me into believing that, you know, the good thing is there's a great chance I'll get an upgrade the next plane I take, and I'm absolutely thrilled when that happens.
Absolutely. There's nothing like having first class when you're jet lagged.
We're, we've talked about four or five different lines of business, and in kind of our closing few minutes, what is the one line that you think has the greatest potential over the next 3 to 5 years?
I think that we look at the market in sort of various segments, but we've talked about grocery and big box and QSR, and we think the early adopter market there and the growth that's going to happen for things like in-store analytics and specifically queue management solutions is by far the number one opportunity for us in the next few years. We think that growth there is going to be huge.
I would agree with that. I mean, literally, people have less tolerance for waiting than ever before. Retailers are struggling to keep their edge from each other, but also from online. Providing a good customer experience at the checkout is an incredibly important thing for them to do, and they recognize that, and they're doing something about it.
Well, I have just glanced at the clock, and I am amazed. We are 51 minutes into this conversation, and I thought we were about 15 to 18 minutes into it.
It has been fun.
This is show number 19, and I don't want to upset any of the first 18 guests that I've had on the show, but I have enjoyed this as much as any show, if not more. Just the educational aspect of it, but just the excitement of that you have and where you're going, and I will not be able to thank you enough for taking the time to visit us here in Booth 61 today.
Oh, we're glad to be here. I think it's testimony, Ricky, to what a great host you are.
Well, thank you very much. Someone wants to get a hold of you, get in touch with you to know more about Brickstream, potential as a customer of yours, perhaps an employee, or just know more about the company as a whole. What is the best way to contact you? Email and your website. Just give everybody the pertinent information so they can contact you.
Brickstream.com, www.brickstream.com, obviously. Go to our Hate to Wait website as well, which is
hatetowait.com with the number 2 in the center there. hatetowait.com.
If you want to communicate with me, please feel free. Steve.Jeffrey, Jeffrey. That's ery at brickstream.com. Or feel free to call on 404-249-8152.
And my email is Christina with a CH dot Elwood with 2 L's at brickstream.com.
Christina, Steve, thank you very, very much. It has been a fantastic show, and I've learned a lot. And I know the folks that are listening live and those that will download it later will walk away a winner from having heard this great segment. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you for having us, Ricky.
Thank you for having us.
This is Ricky Steele. I've finished my coffee in Booth 61. I hope you'll come back and join me for a fresh cup next Wednesday or by listening to any of our past shows anytime at Booth 61 with Ricky Steele. I always close our time together by sharing hopefully a blessing for you, your family, and perhaps your business. This blessing comes from the Book of Numbers. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace. Amen. Thank you for dropping by. Join us next week for a fresh cup in Booth 61.